Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's October 24th, 2014. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
How are you talking to me right now?
I know. Do you hear that sweet sound of the ocean breeze coming from my balcony aboard the Ante Up cruise? Whoosh. No, of course you can't, because I'm not on it yet.
So. Oh, that's right.
Well, technically, I am on it.
Technically, you're on it if they're listening to it while you're on it.
Right. Exactly. If they're listening to it when I'm not on the ship, like I'm not now, because we're recording it before I'm on the ship.
That's right.
Then I'm not on the ship.
Technically, you're not on it, but you are on it. But you're not on it. That's some Dante's Seven Layers of Hell thinking there, I think.
We've just lost all seven of our listeners, too, I think. But yes, I am on the aboard the Ante Up cruise right now, technically. So we're recording a week early to keep the streak alive for all the five of you who believe the streak is still alive. Tune in next week for Tales from the Sea and join us on a future cruise, of course. So our shameless plug for the show. Next cruise is December 15th out of Tampa, Florida. With very limited availability left. We also have staterooms in our control for just $399 per person for our February 9th cruise out of Port Canaveral. Guys out there, that butts up right to Valentine's Day. Perfect gift.
It is, actually.
Perfect gift.
It is.
We'll have those staterooms in our control through November 24th, so call and book before then or while supplies last. And then also remember, in 2015, we'll be sailing out of Baltimore, Boston, and Tampa. All the details on all of these wonderful cruises are at anteupcruises.com. Come join us on the high seas.
I want you to make a prediction so that when we come back on the show, actually, we'll see if it came true. So predict something that'll happen during the week and then tell us the week after that.
This is very interesting because you know how much I love Asian food.
And yes.
You do as well, too,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So I have it probably 4 out of 5 days for lunch. I keep the walk and roll in business there. In fact, actually, because I travel so much, right?
Right.
That when I get back, they're so ecstatic. Like, oh, you're back! You must have been traveling! I am! We missed you! I'm like, I'm sure you did. So I was opening in my fortune cookie the other day, right? It's always the best part of the meal, right? When you get down and you crack it open. And my fortune, you know, is always some kind of Confucius says kind of higher end inspirational crap. Right?
Yeah, it's never really a fortune anymore.
Exactly. This one was, here are your lucky SAT answers. A-A-C-B-C-A.
That's pretty funny.
It's wrong! You know how many fortune cookies I'm going to have to eat now to find out what the questions are that correspond to those letters?
All you got to do is just take the SATs and use it randomly.
I can also see some high school kid getting out like, dude, I'm done. Hey, you want to go out tonight? No, hey, man, I got to start with the SAT tomorrow. I don't.
Got my fortune cookie.
I got my answer right here in the fortune cookie.
Just a pattern. That's all it is. That's pretty funny.
I will predict that the Packers will be win the next two games.
No, that's not I mean a prediction like on the ship. Like something's going to happen to you while you're
ship?
There.
Oh, let me predict that we're going to have some kind of death-defying, craptastic stress on embarkation day, not caused by us, but have to be solved by us. Probably about 100% chance of that happening. Right?
Oh,
that happens every
cruise. Yep.
No, I anticipate that we're going to have a good time. Poker Geek MN is joining us again, always like when he and his wife show up. And a couple other we actually only have, I think, 6 repeat passengers unless counting staff.
Wow.
Staff. So we got a whole big group of new people that the first time on any cruise. So I'm going to predict that we show these folks a really good time, and a lot of these folks come back on one of our future.
There you go. There you
How's
go.
That for a yeah, very...
We won't have an answer to that next week, but or the week after or whatever. But yeah, that's a good one I'd like to have happen. So let's hope that one happens.
Well, here's the other thing. We talked last week, right? That when we do a show a day early, like we did 2 weeks ago,
right?
Or a show a whole week, I guess technically 8 days early, like we did this one right now that we're recording,
right?
That stuff can change between then and make us look more stupid than we already are, right?
Right, which is hard to do.
Yeah, it really is. It's quite a challenge. So anyhow, this happened back when we're recording the show now, not when you're listening to the show. So something might have changed since then. So
right.
That could be a prediction that maybe we're just wasting our time talking about this right now. But we're going to talk about it nonetheless because we need to have a show, right? All right, so clarifying his organization stance, John Pappas, the executive director of the Poker Players Alliance, says the PPA will not support legislation in the upcoming lame duck session of Congress that doesn't legalize poker at the federal level. And confusion came over the possibility of a bill favored by Venetian owner Sheldon Adelson that would ban online gaming, but perhaps offer a carve-out for poker. And Pappas said the PPA would favor such a bill as long as the carve-out for poker is nationwide. So apparently what happened is this is obviously a very confusing kind of wording of what possibly could happen here, right?
Right.
And it sounds like some other poker news organization misunderstood, which is easy to do. And so he had to come back out and say, no, that's what I said, but this is what I mean.
Okay. So basically he supports any legislation that will make poker legal or regulated at the federal level, which means for the whole country, and that's what he means. He doesn't mean...
Yeah, he said, again, the name of the organization is Poker Players Alliance, right?
Yeah.
So they're not out there advocating necessarily for full casino gaming to be available online, and he's made it very clear in this clarification that they are a poker organization first and foremost, so that's what they're lobbying for.
Yes.
Now, if we have to get there by allowing blackjack and roulette and slots to be legal online, they're fine with that. But poker needs to be the...
It needs to be taken care of. He's not out there pushing for an online bill that gets blackjack through, and at the last minute they say, oh, but no poker. You're still going to support it? No, of course not.
Exactly.
It has to be poker.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what was going on here was what usually happens in these negotiations is, hey, it's almost the appeasement thing that worked so well with Hitler back in the day, right?
Oh, man.
You know, the gaming opponents say, all right, how about you, poker fans... We give you poker if you allow us to permanently ban everything else. And that's a compelling argument for a lot of online poker folks because a lot of us aren't going to play online blackjack or roulette, right? So that's what we got to do to get online poker. We're fine. So that seems to be what's going on here, but you can get very creative, as we find with lobbyists and lawmakers, right? So if it's almost like a hollow carve-out, where it's like a carve-out poker is all right wherever the states allow it to be, then it's not really a true carve-out, right?
Right.
You got to go back and do this thing 50 times over, or actually 47 now or whatever it is, times over. And that's not what they want. They want it to be clear. If we're giving up online gaming, we want the carve-out for poker, and that poker has to be recognized by the federal government, so we don't have to deal with all these crazy states. That's what I think is going on here.
Yeah.
Very confusing, right?
Yeah, I mean, but it's good that he clarified that, because, you know, you got a lot of people out there who are supporting the PPA, and they want to make sure that we're, you know, they're getting what they're supporting, you know what I mean?
Right.
And that's why he did that, so that's fine. You always got to cover your bases, and, do we think anything's going to happen? I mean, is that...
Well, there's always a chance. I mean, this stuff is going to happen. It usually happens in this lame duck session. I hate throwing around those terms, but that's what it's called.
Right.
I mean, essentially, for our foreign listeners or our Americans that never grew up with Schoolhouse Rock, what this means is every 2 years, we get a completely new Congress, potentially.
Right.
And and that election happens in November. But the new Congress doesn't take over until January.
Right.
So you've got like these 2 months where you can pass bills where if somebody has been voted out of office, they still get to vote, and therefore they don't have to worry about what the voters think of them anymore.
Right.
So it's more likely to get some of this controversial stuff through at that point because there's less fallout for it. So, in general sense, yes, that's the most likely time for this to happen, but I don't know for sure whether it's what the chances are of this stuff even being brought up at this point.
Okay.
And again, that's just Congress, too. And eventually anything would have to be signed by the president, and that would happen not in the lame duck session, although he's technically lame duck president now, right? So,
right.
All the stars might be aligning here. We might actually be able to see Jupiter and play online poker, but we wouldn't bet the house on it, whether it's Leo or not, too.
Well, speaking of updates, AnyUp update. Don't forget that the next AnyUp Poker Tour series begins in just 1 week, November 1st to the 16th at Derby Lane in St. Pete, one of our favorite haunts. Lots of variety of events, but the headline is the $150 multi-flight main event called the Accumulator with a staggering $250,000 guaranteed prize pool. Enter as often as you want and advance your five biggest stacks. Visit AnyUpMagazine.com/Derby Lane for more information. And then the Seminole Brighton has a league down south from us. The players with the most clocked live play from November 1st to the 21st at Seminole Casino Brighton in Okeechobee, Florida, will be invited to a free roll on November 23rd, the winner of which gets an AnyUp Poker Cruise package. For more information, go to AnyUpCruises.com.
Yeah, starting to get a little out of buzz on this Derby Lane event, and this is a week, again, a week ahead of where we're actually recording the show.
Right.
But it's funny, you tell people this, that, hey, it's $150 buy-in, $250,000 guaranteed, and immediately they're like, you got something wrong there. Is it $1,500 buy-in?
Yeah.
Is it $25,000 guaranteed prize? Well, it can't be both. I'm like, no, I promise you it's both. Wow! How are they going to do that? And, of course, then you explain that you can move on your five biggest stacks, and people get really excited about that as well, too. So, you know, I think our good friends at Derby Lane really stumbled on a really interesting tournament here. So, hope a lot of our folks out there will come out and support it, and it'll be a big success because we want to see creativity in tournaments, I think, right?
Absolutely. Anything to do to make poker exciting and people wanting to play is great by us, so... All right, our listener spotlight. Each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emails us at podcast@AnyUpMagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. It comes from Turdzilla. Never get tired of that name, I got to tell you.
It's making a resurgence on the show now.
Yeah. He says, have you ever thought of doing a speed round of hand analysis? He said, you guys spend 10 minutes reviewing a hand when a player only has 30 to 60 seconds on each street.
I think you might call BS on that because you keep telling me that we spend 45 minutes on hand.
It's almost 30.
You though. Probably wish we could do it.
It's almost 30 minutes, actually.
So you, 10 minutes would be a speed analysis.
The discussions are interesting, but due to the length of discussion, I lose the priority of the analysis. What should I consider first, second? Since you take the time to go to the 10th level. For example, when I look at my hand, I think about cards I would like to see on the flop and the ones that would cause me to check, raise, fold on each street. Well, you know, I think that I am reacting in real time as I'm analyzing it. You have to read it to me, and then you provide your insight after that. But I think I try to react as if I'm playing it. The hardest part for me is separating the fact that it's Hand of the Week from actually playing, because generally Hand of the Weeks we get screwed on.
Right.
But other than that, I think I'm still reacting in live time. I mean, just because Scott has to read it, so that's taking longer than what a flop would, you know, the time frame of a flop being shown to you. But, I mean, other than that, I'm still reacting the way I'm supposed to. It's hard for... So I really am... If you time me, I think I'm still taking less than a minute to give you my answer, which is what he said, a player only has 30 to 60 seconds on each street. I think when I do my analysis, I do it in less than a minute for each time you represent more information.
That's a good
point.
Right? I hadn't thought about that. But,
so yeah. I am reacting that way. It's just that because you and I are involved in this and we're trying to create all these different ways to play the hand, you know, trying to make it entertaining. But I understand what he's saying, but you're not going to learn anything from that if I'm just saying, I'm done. And then you go, okay, turn is this. I'm done. Okay, river is this. I'm done. we're getting the other person's thoughts too, and that's why it takes so long. But I'm still playing it the way you would play it, Turdzilla. I don't know if that helps at all.
Well, it's interesting because we get constructive feedback on the show all the time, and that's exactly what I think this is. It's like, hey, here's another way of looking at this, folks. So I could see, not that we'd want to change the hand of the week, because I think the way we're doing it now is pretty good, but I could see him, as he said, a speed round, maybe every once in a while, maybe just do the hands as quickly as we would in a casino, and then go back and do all the other stuff, right? So maybe you get both of that benefit. You get the how you'd play it in real time, and then now that you've had some time to think about it and consider everything.
Right.
I think what you lose in that, though, I think, is the discussion that we have with each street. Because once you know the end of it, the hand, then it's any analysis you give after that is skewed by what you know, right?
Right.
I mean, kind of the beauty how we do it is you don't see these hands before we start talking.
Right.
So, you know, you have no idea. I've seen them, but hopefully it's been a month or two, depending on how many hands we get before we talk about the show. So sometimes I forget.
Right.
So we get that extra surprise factor that you lose in that speed thing. But the other thing too, I like to take these opportunities to kind of explain my philosophy on the hand of the week too. I mean, I think the reason that we go to the tenth, whatever the tenth level we said there, is important because we're not trying to solve the hand of the week for that particular hand. We're using it as an apparatus to talk about the issues that are playing that hand.
Exactly.
And concepts that people might not have thought about or really kind of beaten the snot out of this hand, right, for everything you get out of it. So you can take all of that stuff and apply it to the next hand. Because, again, I say this all the time, every hand of the week that happens, you will never see that hand ever again.
Right.
You'll see parts of it that are similar. You'll get pocket queens again, obviously. You will, you know, have somebody hit a flush on the river. All that kind of stuff happens again. But the actual... everything at the table and the mechanism of that hand is never going to happen ever again. So, but you could use that lesson to learn how to apply each piece in a different situation that comes up. So, that's why I kind of like the 45-minute hand analysis. You know, sometimes it probably goes on too far. Because I think we're trying to really explain as much as we possibly can out of that one single hand and turn it into something that's bigger than we thought.
I almost was going to suggest that if we wanted to, we could do something where you say, the opponent in this hand is going to have $200 in front of him, and he's on the button. We're in the small blind. We have ace-king suited and spades. Here we go. Okay, flop. All right, so that guy bet. What are you going to, you know, what do you do? I say what I'm going to do. Then you say, okay, here's the flop. You check to him. He bet. And then I say, okay, here's what I'm going to do. But I just say what I'm going to do. I'm not, you know what I mean? But at the end, you can't really do that because what that opponent did isn't exactly what he might have done had I played the hand the way I'm playing it. So you can't do that. I was thinking about maybe we could do that, but you can't.
Kind of situation,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can't change what the other person's doing, reacting to what I would have done. So you can't do it. So... there's just no way to do that. I really, for a second there, I was like, wait, maybe we could try doing something different where I could just play the hand real quickly, not say anything about why I'm doing these things, and then go back and then say, okay, here's why I did this. But no, you can't do that because the person's reaction to what you're doing is not genuine. It's what he did to the person who sent in the hand. So you can't do that. So really, it has to be done the way we're doing it. I really don't see any other way to do it.
All right. Well, we'll continue to think about it.
Yeah.
And see what we come up with.
That's a good thought, though. I understand what he's saying. But I do, if you listen to the show, I do try to react as if I'm at the table for my immediate decision. I tell you what's going through my head, which is what I'd be doing if I'm playing poker. And then I think my initial response is under a minute every time, but I could be wrong.
I'm going to time you tonight.
Yeah, time me, will you?
This afternoon.
Yeah, okay.
This
good.
Morning.
All right, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game, and you're not sure what the ruling should have been, email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com, and we'll have Golden Nugget Las Vegas poker director Sam Minatello tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is TournamentButton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons and timers built into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo, and ask about the AntiUp logo version, and use code ANTIUP for free shipping. This comes from my boy Gino in Brooklyn. He says, we are in a cash game in Atlantic City Casino when a player accidentally drops a small bag of marijuana on the floor.
This might be the first time marijuana has implicitly been in the hall floor.
Immediately, a security officer positions himself behind the player and grabs the contraband and sternly declares, don't move. The guard then exited the poker room to radio police. Immediately, the player swiped his chips off the table and ran to the boardwalk with security in pursuit. I'm concerned that the guard was not acting in the house's best interest or his own by leaving the room. Is it reasonable or even acceptable to be coerced by a non-government entity to wait around to be arrested? Also, what gives anyone the right to seize a player's property without consent when the offense, if any, is a minor violation?
Wow, heady stuff, right?
Yeah, this is not a call to floor. This is like a call to police.
Or not call the police.
Exactly. Right.
Sam said he didn't want to answer because he thought this was an internal casino issue, which is probably a good point.
Yeah.
But we can give our stupid, uneducated thoughts about it, right? I think there's a couple of things that are interesting here about the question. I mean, one, I don't know what I'd do if somebody dropped a small bag of marijuana on the floor. Obviously, people saw it, right, and go, ooh! I think it's perfectly reasonable for a casino security officer to act on this, I think, right? Just because he's not a true law enforcement officer doesn't mean that casino wants people doing illegal activity on their property, right?
Right.
And possessing marijuana, whether you agree with it or not, is still illegal. So I'm sure he would want you to leave the casino at the very least. Now, they probably have some kind of internal control issue, which is what Sam was talking about, that state what happened in a case like this. If you're a security guard and you see somebody with illegal drugs on our property, it's not enough for us just to walk them out. We want to call law enforcement and have them take care of it. That's what we don't know here, right?
Right.
But I think it's reasonable to assume that some casinos would take that stance. Because, again, I mean, there's a show of force there. I mean, a lot of it's not just going after that particular person. It's letting folks know, hey, we don't tolerate this in this casino for two reasons. One, if there's other folks sitting there with bags of marijuana in their hand, maybe they're going to get up and leave before this happens. They're like, oh, my God, these guys take it seriously here, man. I'm going to go play somewhere else. Or to reassure other folks that are not in favor of these kind of recreational drugs that this is a place that they can play where people will not be tolerated to have that on the person. Either way, it's a bonus for him, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess I don't have any problem with any of this. I mean, I guess the one thing he said that it did seem odd that the guard left, which I don't really understand why you need to leave the room to radio police if that's what's going on here, right? Don't you have those little speakers on all these security guards anyhow,
even,
right?
Even if they don't, you just stand behind the guy and say, hey, dealer, get the floor over here, and then floor, call the security for
you. Yeah,
or
a little
something.
Runner,
I mean,
right?
Yeah, what do you need to leave for? That was silly.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about this. I just don't know. I mean, it's illegal to own that stuff, but it's illegal to do a lot of things. Are they going to, you know, I mean, but it's on their property, so, but he's not actually smoking it, but he's possessing it. I know that. And I'm not one of those, you know, hey, the dude blights, you know, I'm not something like that. I mean, I'm basically, you know, I don't smoke it. I don't smoke anything, and you know, I'm a teetotaler, so I'm pretty vanilla. But I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. I think I'd have to actually get into like my Zen, you know, stance and give that some hard thought. But hey, it's their property, and they could throw you out for any reason they want. But you know,
doesn't Miley Cyrus say that? My casino, I can do what I want to.
But you know, I mean, you can be cool about it too. I mean, you're gonna call the cops. Just throw the guy out. You know,
that's what I'm saying. I mean, we don't know. This is probably why Sam didn't want to answer.
Right.
That there are probably casinos that's what they have decided. You know, let's just get them out of the building and tell them not to come back. Where other ones are probably, hey, you know, if we don't call the cops, then we're probably got some kind of legal culpability or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
And therefore, we are going to call the cops. And, you know, I mean, it's the same thing when you have those big signs outside your casino, you know, no firearms, right? I mean, what happens if somebody flashes a gun, whether it's a concealed one or they actually are trying to use it, you know?
Yep.
You don't just want to walk them out and say, hey, go shoot somebody outside, right? I think you want to have the police involved, and that way you've taken care of your liability, right?
So yeah,
it
that's
probably does come down to a liability.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a much greater risk having somebody with a gun in your casino than someone with a dime bag pot. But then you get into the picking and choosing, right? And I think it's just easier from a rule standpoint just to say, hey, if you see illegal activity, call the cops. That's what we do here.
Look at you with the terminology.
Yeah.
You're all street cred.
Yeah, I always thought it would be interesting to carry around bags of dimes. And then just accidentally drop it somewhere. All right, that's my dime bag.
Accidentally drop it at the poker table. Don't take me out, man. It's just a dime bag.
Dude, I need that for the laundry later, man.
All right, we get to complete O'Malley's move today. Let's refresh our memories with part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week begins a series of three hands in which we're seated at a rare $1, $2 PLO 8 casino cash game. Rare for this casino, anyway. We've also just barely sat down, and for the first hand at the table, we're in the big blind with 200 in chips. We post. It's eight-handed. The under-the-gun limps, plus one folds, MPs 1 and 2 limp, cutoff limps, button folds, small blind completes, and we have the 8 of hearts, 8 of clubs, 5 of hearts, 5 of diamonds, and no information on any opponents at this table, except that 5 of the 8 players limped. We check with our trash, and with 6 players going to the flop and $12 in there, it comes down the king of hearts, 8 of diamonds, 4 of hearts. An interesting flop, we've made the second set and have a weak flush draw. The small blind checks, and at this point, I'm thinking we're going to make a bet. It's unlikely anyone has kings, so at this point, we're probably good on the high. Also, if there are any ace threes out there, we might be able to push them off by possibly representing a weak ace two. We make it $8 to go. It's folded all the way around to the cutoff, who calls. He has roughly the same amount of chips we do. The small blind folds. Oh goody, a PLO 8 hand played out of position. Isn't this Chris's favorite scenario? With about $25 in the pot, the turn is the queen of diamonds. I'm not sure where this guy is at in the hand, maybe ace of hearts, three of hearts. With no information on our opponent, we slow down and check. He fires $15 into the pot. Perhaps we make our first mistake in the hand, because we decide to pay to get some information out of this guy. With $50 in the pot, the river is the deuce of clubs, completing the low draw, but virtually nothing else. We again decide to check, and our opponent fires another bullet, this one for $40. So, are we folding? Calling to get information? Is there any argument for a raise here? What's the move?
All right, first, let me say how much I hate to check on the turn here, right?
Yeah.
You know, we felt our high was good on the flop. Only one hand beats us now. And I think we need to continue to make those low draws pay. That's the name of the game in PLA. It's funny because I just, I just bought my wife a car. And when I was at the finance guys, a huge poker player. So you know, we started talking about ante up and stuff, right?
Right.
And we actually talked about how he used to play his home game with PLO 8 for big money. And he's like, I can't play there anymore because the players are just crazy, right? He's like, the flop was king, queen, tray. And I immediately said, and the lowest state in, right? He's like, yes, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And that's exactly it here. So, I mean, this is a different situation, obviously, because the flop put two low cards there. But now we got lucky here. The turn is not another low card, so we get to make those low draws pay not once but twice to hit that low and take half the pot from us because our low sucks, right?
Right.
So that's exactly why I think we needed to bet there. But that's not the O'Malley's move, right? We've moved on from that, right?
Right.
So here at the end, you know, I really don't see a reason not to call here. We've got second best hand on the high. We actually do have a low in case we're wrong on one side of it. But our low is pretty weak, and we don't have the nuts on the high, so I don't see a reason to raise either. So to me, this is an easy call. Maybe I'm missing something.
We have the third best high, right? Because the king and the queen.
Oh, third. I'm sorry.
All right, so the third. But still, it makes no difference. what I said was that the fact that it's PL08 allows me to call because, like you said, only two hands beat my high, and he could have easily been betting the low. And so on the come, and then got there, and no. But I'm going to call, and like you said, no raise because we're not comfortable with our high, and we're not comfortable with this guy now shoves on us, and we got to think, oh, great. You know what I mean? So.
I guess I'm more comfortable with my high than I probably should be, but yeah. The fact that I know that this guy's probably he's not sticking in with a too terribly weak low of ours without a low. I mean,
right.
A high.
Over high, right.
Without having a low as well, too. So I don't see any – I really would be shocked if we scooped this pot. I mean, I'm pretty sure we're losing the low here, and then it's questionable to some degree whether we win the high. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, here we go. Here comes part two.
Hello again. We are most likely beat on the low, seeing as how we don't have one. However, as we've learned in recent hands of the week, that may not always be the case. This guy could be brand new to the game and not have a low at all, or possibly a counterfeit one. Let's look at the texture of this board. There's no straight, no flush, and no paired board, meaning we have the third nuts to the high. So is $40 into $90, or in this case $40 to win $65, worth finding that out? We've only invested $25 into this hand. We could fold and make that back relatively quickly. Can we put him on kings or queens? Overall, curiosity gets the best of us, and we make the call. Our opponent tables the ace of hearts, queen of clubs, four of clubs, tray of spades. Phew. Chop it up. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, pay attention to the texture of the board. Sometimes it may look like there are a lot of options out there, when in reality, there's not. I hope to see you on the felt.
I'm struggling, buddy. I can't come up with anything else to say here. I think we talked about it enough. I mean, this is kind of exactly what we thought, right?
Yep, betting the low. Yeah, low.
And we were betting all along. So, again, I mean, this is what's interesting about – see, now I guess I found something, right?
Yep.
This is interesting about Omaha 8 is that you're both trying to figure out what each other has based on how we went. Since we're the aggressor in this hand based on those things, it's more likely to put us on the high than the low, which is what he did. And thought if he could bet – obviously, he knew his low was he had a nut low, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, unless we also had the same thing and we got quartered, that'd be a bad move on his part. But he's probably assuming that, we were going for the high, we have the low, and, if he doesn't bet there, maybe if he bets there, we get the fold and we get the whole thing. That's the only way he can win both, because his high was what?
Two pair.
Oh, two pair.
Yeah, queens and fours.
Yeah. So, I mean, he actually had probably a reasonable expectation that he probably could have scooped here.
Yeah. Eh, well, that's why we play the game, I guess, and that's why PL08 should never be played.
Oh, man.
This is Daniel Negreanu of FullContactPoker.com. You're listening to Ante Up.
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. And if you listened last week, this is a continuation of that. We solved that hand last week, so you don't have to remember anything about that. But our good friend David Bloomberg sent us two hands from the same session against the same opponent. So you're not missing anything by listening last week's show. But also, we're hoping that there's some stuff that we talked about last week's show that will help this hand, right?
That's right.
So if you listened last week, bonus. If you didn't listen last week, we hate you. You should listen to every show, but you're fine. You don't have to go back and listen to that before. It's not like, watching Empire Strikes Back before you watch Star Wars, right?
Right. We're okay. I think you've waxed on poetic about this enough. I think we're okay. They understand. Let's move on.
All right. So just to remind you, he's in a 1-2 Nolan home game. He's 46 years young, and most of the other players here are 10 to 20 years older than him. And are rather tight, but still got some moves left, right?
Right.
All right. So this is the hand for this week. It happened a couple weeks later, so not the same night actually. It was, but the same group of guys.
Right.
He says, "I'm in the small blind. Had won a couple decent pots. Had over 300 in front of me, and six players have limped to us." And he says, "Limping is fairly common in this game." He says, on this night, I saw one hand where pocket nines and pocket tens both limped in the same hand. But we don't have either of those hands. We are in the small blind with 5-6 offsuit.
Oh, jeez.
With, 27 limpers? Six limpers.
I don't know. I mean, I'm probably being too tight here and folding it.
Oh, my gosh. I think you are.
But I'm going to call. I said I would be too tight in folding it, but okay, I didn't fold. So I'll call. But, you know, it's the kind of hand you can get in trouble with, too, because you're out of position the rest of the way. You don't have anything good, really. You really have to flop something really good and hope somebody hits something secondly good, you know. And so it's a hassle, but all right, I'll limp. I'm not doing anything stupid.
Yeah, this is one of these interesting things where I think if people go back and listen to our hands of the week, they think they have a gotcha moment with me when I say I'm going to call here. And they say, don't you always say just because it's a discount doesn't mean it's a deal? And I do, but here it is a deal. I think we got six limpers. It's a different story if you've got like it limps around to the button who calls, and now it's just you, and you're like, oh, it's only a dollar.
Right.
Here we got six people then, so if we hit this flop hard, it's worth that extra buck for me, I think.
Yeah.
Because we have so many people.
Yeah.
But you're right. It doesn't change the fact that I need to hit this hard.
That's right.
There's too many people in this hand for me to get crazy with a flop that has a five on it. Nothing else.
Right.
All right. That's what our hero does. He tosses in the extra dollar and says, I'll see what happens. He says, just for variety, I do something I rarely do. I check in the dark.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm not going to, you know, whatever. But sometimes, sometimes you don't want to do that. But most of the time you don't want to do that.
Yeah,
just because you don't know what's going to come and it's not.
Very limited opportunities where I think checking in the dark is actually a beneficial thing to do.
Yeah.
I think. Maybe somebody else has another idea.
Yeah, I mean, why put yourself at a disadvantage when there might be something that flops that you can now change your mind about? And if you ever regret it once, then that's one time too many. So,
well, I mean, and also think about the hand we have here, right? We're putting this dollar in presumably because there's so many limpers and there's a big possibility for us to flop big and get a lot of money from a lot of people, right?
Right.
Checking in the dark, I think. Now, what do you do? If you check in the dark, and then you hit this flop hard, somebody bets, and you check raise, aren't you losing value at that point?
Probably.
Because now you're telling somebody, hey, I had a strong hand, I checked in the dark because I wanted to see you idiots bet so I could check raise you, and now it shuts down the action. At least that's what I think from the outside.
Or you're telling them that I didn't have a strong hand, but now I've hit it hard, and now I've got a chance to raise you. So either way, you've got a good hand.
Either way, yeah, you're shutting down the value.
Yep.
I don't think that's good. I mean, let's think of a different story. Let's flop comes 5-6 ace, and you bet out. Now they don't know you have 5-6. They probably think you might have a weak ace or something like that, and your hand is more disguised, and you're probably going to get a couple callers, potentially, or something like that. Or if we flop a straight here, you know, with, what, the 4-7-8 or something, right?
Right.
You know, some people might actually think that we had 5-6 there, but more likely they're going to think we had some kind of crap hand like 10-8 or something, and we're betting the top pair to try to get somebody out.
Right.
And we're going to get value that way, too. But if we check, we miss the opportunity to make those bets and get that value, I think. And it forces us to check raise to get some value, which kills the hand. Or it forces us just to call and then come alive on the turn, which could work depending on what the turn is, but more than likely it's going to have the same effect as check raising from the check in the dark. So I hate this move. Sorry, Davids. Hate it.
That was more than 60 seconds.
Yeah, sorry. You're only bound to that, and I'm not.
Oh, that's right, that's right. Okay.
All right, so the flop is the 8 of spades, 6 of clubs, 10 of diamonds. And remember, we checked in the dark. So it checks around to the cutoff, who is our villain from last week's show, who bets $6. Button calls as well, too, and it's back on us.
See, again, we didn't hit this hard. I mean, we hit middle pair and on a board that someone could already have a straight on, could have two, obviously. Or bottom pair, I mean. So we have nothing, and we have no kicker to go with it. So even if somebody else has a six, I mean, they're likely going to have at least a seven, maybe an ace to go with their six or suited ace, you know, like ace six of hearts or something. So I'm not happy with hitting that six. I want to flop two pair or an open-ended straight draw or something, or a, you know, trips. just one pair, and somebody's betting and somebody's calling. What am I hoping to do here? Am I really good?
Five is not what I want to see after this either, because a five helps complete some more straights. Again, yes. It's kind of likely straights, but still.
Yes.
I'm not comfortable with the five hitting either. And even if a five does, we've got bottom two pair, right?
Yes.
So really, now, at this point, we're going to call the $6 in the hopes that either both of these players are betting and calling with air, and our six will hold up through two more rounds of betting. Or that we're going to hit one of the two remaining sixes.
Yeah, see,
which still might not even be good. I mean, I guess it's a rainbow flop right now, so I'm not too worried about the flushes, I guess. But yeah, this is danger. Will Robinson get out of his hand territory for me here? I put the buck in. I tried to hit it hard. I didn't get it. You know, I don't always win the Powerball either, but I'm going to put a buck in it.
Right, exactly. That's exactly what you're doing. You were playing the lottery, hoping to hit something that would at least get your money back, and I think you're just asking for trouble, which is what we talked about before. I almost folded pre-flop, but I didn't because you got such good money odds on your money that you want to try to flop something, and you didn't. So let's just let it go.
Now, I guess the reason that we're talking about this guy again, right, is that from last week, if you listen to the show, this guy may overplayed his hand with pocket fours, right?
Right.
So if that's why we're talking about again, that we think this guy overplays his hand, but last week we had pocket queens. This week we have 5-6 with bottom pair, right?
Right.
So unless he has pocket fours again, we're in trouble. And we've got a third person.
I was going to say we have another opponent, too, so you can't even do that.
Yeah. All right. Sorry.
Yeah, I got to let it go.
All right. Now, our hero says, I know I should probably fold, but I've recently been playing around with occasionally floating when I have middle pair. Impossible draws to draws like this hand. Also, it's not heard of for this villain to be trying to steal the pot in position after a bunch of checkers. So I call and hope for the best. A couple other players also call.
All right, so when you say floating, you're not floating out of position. You're a small blind. You can't float. You can try a reverse float, but not with multiple opponents. And this is not floating. Floating is in position, waiting for them to crack, and then you come down with a bet. This is kind of like... You know, kind of weird. This is sort of like treading water. It's not really floating. It's
treading water.
You know, I don't think you're really floating there. But I understand what you're saying. But you have all these other people in the pot now. You know, what are you hoping to hit?
Yeah, well, that's the difference. Is one, we had to assume that all these people were going to come around to make this right.
Right.
And even then, I mean, pre-flop, we were putting $1 in for this lucky, right? Now we're putting six more in. With this lucky card. And again, as we mentioned, we're down to two outs to hit that lucky thing. I just don't see it paying off for us.
Mm. No, I agree wholeheartedly.
All right. Then the best thing happens, the six of spades on the turn. So great. Toby blows our whole hand, right? After we just bashed poor David for setting in this hand. What are you waiting for? One of the two sixes? That's exactly what happened. And, of course, we're first to act because we're in the small blind.
I'm going to check. Because when we bet, then they're going to be like, oh, yeah.
Turns our hands face up.
Face
right?
up. So we check to say, okay, we bet. We checked in the dark, and maybe we have a draw, and that's why. So we check again, like we missed the draw, and we're afraid of the six, and let somebody else try to steal it again. And then maybe we can come over the top so we got at least that value. Because you also do want to protect against something... like a nine coming and somebody having pocket sevens, or so you wanna protect against that. So or a seven coming and protect against like something with 9, 10 or so let's check and hope somebody bets.
It's really like the check in the dark now.
but it's tough though if you check. You know what I mean? If you check.
Well, that's an interesting play. I mean, could you say, hey, when the dealer looks at you, like, hey, I checked in the dark. Oh, really? I didn't hear you.
Oh, yeah.
And nobody else heard, you know, hey, that's a little misdirection I haven't tried before.
Hey, are you angle shooting like Phil Ivey?
That's edge sorting, please.
Oh, I'm sorry, edge sorting, that's right.
all right, so we're going to check and hope for the check raise, right?
Yeah.
All right. Our hero says, I decided to check and see what the other players do. They checked with the villain, who throws in a blue $50 chip. And he's like, wait, what? We've never even used the blue $50 chips before, so I'm a bit surprised to see it. But the game is at his house tonight, and he decided to break these babies out. Says the bet is big enough to cause the button to fold. And he says, in fact, it's a bit of an overbet since the pot is around $44 and it's back to us.
All right. So, again, this villain, it's the same villain from the week ago who had 4-4.
Right.
Right. Okay. So, I think at this point, it's okay to raise all in. I don't think that this guy had made a boat, again, just like last week. If this guy made a boat, all right, he's not going to try to scare us out of this pot. If he has a six like us, then we're probably going to chop the pot with him, unless he's got A6, because I don't think he's playing King-6, Queen-6, Jack-6, 10-6, 9-6, maybe 8-6, but he's got a boat now, so he wouldn't... So, I mean, really, any six that beats us is really only one six that conceivably beats us that we'd play is A6. He could have 5-6 like us and, you know, have the same hand, but then we're not losing to that. So I think a raise here to like 150 or even 120 or whatever. Maybe, I know sometimes you like to come back with, let's just min bet and raise him to 100. So that's also a possibility. But I think that I'm ready to drop the hammer down because of the fact that a 9 could come, and that means any 7 wins, any 7-6 wins. I guess 7-6 could beat us, but then you'd have to have the precise card that fits in the low that would let the 7 play.
Right.
But no, even 7 doesn't play because it'd be 3-6s with 10-8. So the 7 doesn't play either. So I think that we can comfortably raise him here now. And then if he shoves or whatever, I mean, I can't go anywhere. I got a ton of outs for a boat if he somehow has a straight. If he has a boat bigger than ours, I don't think he would have played it this way, you know, if he had 10-10 or 8-8. So I'm comfortable raising here. I would like to make it maybe 100, 120 or so.
Yeah, friendly game. I'll mid-raise to 100. At this point, I'm curious what the $100 chip color is.
Yeah.
$50 chip. But yeah, at least 100, and I'm not opposed to the betting more than that either. But
do you like a call there? I'm wondering, I think a call is a mistake because of what
kind of... Well, I guess the call... Again, I guess we have to figure out what the story is here. And a call almost seems really fishy to me. Although I guess, I mean, if we're raising here, we're also saying we have a 6. So I guess either way, we're saying we have a 6, right? So
yeah,
you might as well get the value out of it by raising here. Because if not, I mean, we don't want to check the river, right?
Right.
We're going to have to bet the river regardless, so why not? Let's put some value in now and see if he, like, bites on a call.
Hmm.
And then maybe we could bet a smaller amount on the river, you know.
Right.
Another blue chip, if we have one. I don't know. But, yeah. I don't know, actually. I guess it's a tough call. You're right. I'm going to go with the propensity of this guy to overvalue his hands, which is what we know from just one single hand that we played against him
right.
on the show. I'm more likely to try to get value in here, knowing that there's a possibility I can get value out of him on two streets.
Right.
It is possible that we're behind here, too, you know, but...
But yeah. Very, very hard to be behind here. I mean, it is a possibility.
Set, I think, is the only thing really we're behind here.
Yeah, and that's a full house or A6. You're behind A6 and a full house, so...
Or pocket eights, pocket tens have us beat here, too.
Yeah, that's a full house. The board
right, yeah, that's
sixes.
What I'm saying. Yeah. And those are hands that could play, particularly, didn't this guy say, the limping is fairly common, including nines and tens? Is he almost foreshadowing us here?
Yeah, but do you really... Bet 50 with a full house there. You don't want to scare.
No,
anybody.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So, I think we're unless, safe to raise.
Unless the guy listened to last week's show in between these two hands, and knows that he misplayed that hand, and now he's using reverse psychology on us.
Yeah.
That's possible.
Yeah, I don't think that's
possible. If he could actually have listened to the show before the guy sent the second hand in, but.
Yeah, I don't think so. I told you to make a prediction in the beginning of the show, but that's not the good one. That's not
the good one.
That didn't work right there. So. All right, what happens?
All right, our hero says, I do somewhat worry that he could have a full house, but I don't think he'd bet that much if he did. Exactly what we said, right? So I call, and everyone else folds. The river is the nine of spades. So what's a maker board here?
Makes it ugly.
8 of spades, 6 of clubs, 10 of diamonds, 6 of spades, 9 of spades. So spades got there, lots of straights get there. And he says, of course, there's three spades on the board and straight draw as well. And, of course, we're in the small blind, so we're first to punish ourselves.
Oh, man. That's, I mean, whatever. You know what I mean? I mean, really. I mean, we got three sixes. The problem is that any seven makes a straight, two spades. He wouldn't have bet out. You know what I mean? He wouldn't. I don't think he would have bet out with two spades, $50. So I don't think the flush bothers me. The
well, he
seven
could have
hurts.
Spades with a pair, right? That's a possibility. Right?
But would he bet 50 on the turn?
Two spades with ten of spades is one of them.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's still top pair.
Man,
top
it's kicker. Such a narrow hand
with the flush draw to come. But okay. We're getting very narrow here, right?
Yeah, and also, would he have done that with a 10 on the first street? Would he have just called? See, that's the thing I'm confused about now. Was he the one that bet the 6?
A gut shot, too. So, 7, if you get 7, 10 or something crazy like that. Because remember, he's limped.
You could have 7, 6. That's the thing I'm afraid of. The only hand I'm really afraid of right now is 7, 6. But let me ask you this. Did the villain bet the 6 after the flop, or was he the button that called the 6?
He was the aggressor.
So he was the one that bet the 6.
Yes, exactly, then the button called.
Okay. So,
unfortunately, we're in a tough spot here either, right? We bet, whether we bet or check, this guy has a possibility of shoving and putting us to a test, right?
Right.
I guess that's what it comes down to me, is that he's possible that you could shove either way. So I'm going to turtle a little here. I'm going to check and maybe hopefully he checks behind or puts a smallish bet and he'll call and hope that my sixes are good. To me, I don't see much value in betting here and letting him raise me and orphan that money or feel like I have to call even more than I already was going to put in. It's quite possible I check, he's going to show up and I get a choice at that point too. But at least then I have that choice without knowing that I've already got 50 committed to this river. Right.
Yeah. I don't know. Also, remember, this guy overvalues hands, too. It could be a thing where if we put out a bet, he finally believes it and folds or just calls thinking that his ace-10 was good, you know, or something. I don't know. Maybe a defensive bet? Are you thinking about maybe a defensive bet, like 50 or 60 or
something? I guess that's what I'm saying, is a defensive bet, if we knew it would work, absolutely, but this guy shoved on his last streak, right?
Yeah.
On a board that made no sense for him to shove. So what's going to stop him shoving?
Yeah, but that was when we checked. We checked and then he shoved. So if we checked now, he might do the same thing.
This board is so scary right now. And to be honest, it's so convoluted. I mean, we're already trying to figure out what he has. This is a completely different hand from last week where he didn't have to tell a story here. There's so many different stories here. There's no way for us to figure out what he has. Whereas last week it was a lot easier. So at this point, I think he, unless he's worried that we have the spades.
Right, because we only called his bet. You have to remember that. We might be able to now check to have him be afraid that the spades got there and check behind because we only checked and then called. So we could have been drawing to that
right,
straight.
But it's been runner spades, too. So I think it's really
too.
Hard to put.
And the straight, the seven.
Yeah, I think it's hard to put us on.
7-6?
And actually, I guess it's hard to put him on spades as well, too.
Right, that's what I was saying. I'm not afraid of the spades at all. I'm afraid of 7-6 is what I'm afraid of, or 7-something.
Well, if that's the case, you're only worried about one particular hand.
Right, so you got to...
You shouldn't be scared at all, then you're right. You put a bet in it. If he raises you, you're going to call anything, right?
Probably.
Not going to fold for one possible hand.
Right, because a shove makes no sense to us here. Because he could be afraid of the spades, and he didn't play it like he had spades. So the only thing we were afraid of is a 7, and why wouldn't he want to get value? Plus, we could have the spades. Why would he bet a straight so strongly, like a shove, knowing the spades are out there? So I feel like if we can get away with a little bet here and he'd just call or fold, I don't think we're going to get raised off our hand. I think we need to put a blocking bet out there, like 50 or 60.
Hmm. Okay. All right, here it says, I don't put him on any sort of flush or straight draw, but even if he is, I want to take control of the hand. I look over something I should have done earlier and see what looks like another blue chip in the stack, along with some $25 green chips and a few stacks of $5 chips, probably around $200 left. I'm worried if I check again, he'll just shove like he's done previously. as we talked about last week, and I'll be put to a bigger decision than I want right now. So I decided on a combination blocking bet value bet of $70, which is certainly enough to make him think about things if he doesn't have a huge hand.
I said 50 or 60, so hey, 70's fine too.
Yep.
I find that interesting. I like that bet, and that he arrived at the same conclusion that we did.
He says, and think he does. He tanks for about 5 to 10 minutes. At least it seemed that long.
10 minutes? I don't know about that.
Which is quite long in this game. He then shows me a 6 and folds.
Ooh.
He further says that while he didn't think I'd have called $50 on the turn with just a flush draw, he was worried about a boat and even a straight. Also, his kicker wouldn't have played because it was so low. Basically, he had the same hand I did, and we would have chopped, but by betting out first on the river, he was unable to call me. The story he saw for me made enough sense to get him to fold compared to the story he was telling in hand number one last week, which didn't make any sense at all.
Wow. So he had a 6-2. Huh. I mean, 6 also.
Yeah. 6-2s. Oh, they probably did have 6-2s.
He might have. He might have had 6-2s. Wow, that's interesting that he folded, too. I mean, he bet 50.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you more to think about it. You're right. There's so much noise on that board that not only were we unable to figure out what he had, if we bet, he's unable to figure out what we have, too.
Right.
And it just comes down to whether you're willing to wager some money to see whether your hand is good or not, right?
Wow. Well, Dave, thanks for the two-part hand. Actually, not really the two-part hand, but it's kind of the sequel.
The sequel.
Thanks for the sequel. Much appreciated. Scott, I hope you had a good cruise, and looking forward to the stories when you get back. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.